quite true that the Who attracts hearts, but that the whole lot of things that I want to say tonight that will lead up to it, I hope, but not beginning from that. Now I'm speaking to you with words, and you're listening to the words that I'm saying. For what I want to convey to you and what you want to hear from me cannot be said in words. So we start with an impossibility. I want to speak about what can't be said. This I want you to take seriously. When I say that it can't be said, I just do mean that. It can be talked about, but when one talks about it, one is talking about an image, an idea, or perhaps even nothing more than a lot of words. How far is it beyond words? If it were just one step beyond words, maybe that some sort of analogy, description, or picture would help. I'm going to speak about who in the sense that the Sufis use this word in the ordinary way. In Arabic it means nothing. He, she, it, anything you like. It just tacks on the end of verbs and means he. It can be used in the most ordinary way in everyday Arabic conversation. But it also means the ultimate, that which is entirely beyond all attributes, beyond anything that can ever be said. It also does mean the nearest of all, is what Najm ed-Din Kubra, his explanation of it, I can start with. He said, every time we breathe, we say this, this ah of Allah is the essential reality of everything, because everything that breathes, every breath says this. This is a way of expressing this immanence, the indwelling of this in everything. One cannot breathe without saying it. That's how he explained it. That's one way of feeling it and experiencing it. This is the very essence of our breathing. That means the very essence of our lives, the very essence of our being. But for the Sufi, I think it's not so easy to take in that way. We, for some reason or other, have been put into this world. We've been put into this human body. For me, there's no doubt that this has been done for a purpose, and we are expected to fulfill that purpose. We've not been sent here for nothing. We haven't even been sent here for our own benefit, but because there is something that is required of us. And we've been sent about as far away as it's possible to be sent without losing contact with the source, that is, without losing the possibility of returning by one's own volition to the source. If we had been sent further away than this, if we'd been sent into an animal form or a vegetable form, we wouldn't be able to return of our own accord. We would have had to depend upon the whole evolutionary process to bring us back. Where we are situated, it is just possible to return. That is, to return of our own volition, not by the stream. Everything will return by the stream. But we men are given the possibility of direct return. This state in which we are, this the Sufi term, nasut, nasut, this condition here of existence, which is sometimes called the human condition, really is the human condition together with everything that surrounds us. All this life of the animal, vegetable, mineral world, this is the world to which we've been sent. If we're not able to make our way back by our own volition, it doesn't mean that everything is lost, because we shall return in any case with the stream that flows back to the source. But that's not really what is intended for man. Man's destiny is not just to be carried along in the stream of evolution, through mineral to vegetable, through vegetable to animal, through animal to this kind of life, and from this to others. The source is what we are speaking about. This is the word who. It is a very restricted world, a very restricted conditioned state of existence. We only can see sideways in this world. We see this earth, we see this sun and solar system, we see stars and galaxies. They're all alongside of us. There's no way back through them. The whole of this universe is ordinary. The whole of this universe is subject to the same conditions, the same limitations as our existence. The whole of this visible creation is nothing but this nasut. We think because it is very great, very large in size, because it has existed for thousands of millions of years, that it is something great. It is nothing but one sheet of paper in a great book. But we are hypnotized by this world round us. We can't help, somehow or other, falling into this illusion that it is, because it is large, it is great. There's no greater than just a sheet of paper put on the floor. Till we can free ourselves from this illusion that this world is great, we find it very difficult to begin to make the journey towards what are the truly great worlds. The truly great worlds are within. It sometimes happens to us that a glimpse comes of this very next world to ours. When that glimpse comes to someone, they are overwhelmed by it. This is infinity, they say. This is all. Now this is the cosmos revealed. And they call this cosmic consciousness. Wonderful. The whole, everything is transformed. Everything is full of wonder and astonishing. Infinity has revealed itself. What has really happened? One little glimpse into a world that is beyond this one. Not even drawn into that world. Not even yet coming under the power of that world. And that's what is called cosmic consciousness. You see descriptions of cosmic consciousness. They sound wonderful. Visions of infinity, unlimited worlds, beauty beyond telling. It is nothing. It is still only just a change of our subjective state. People are drowned again and again in this vision of cosmic consciousness. But what kind of drowning? They just come up and sneeze and everything is just as it was before. All kinds of ecstatic visions, all sorts of wonders, trances and the rest of it, are just nothing else but having added one dimension to our experience. Instead of this flat world in which we live, we've seen some depths. And everything is so changed and transformed by having that perspective in it that we think this is the reality. I have now seen all that there is to see. All has been revealed to me. And over again people fall into this trap. It is a trap because if they believe in that vision, they will be satisfied with it. If they believe that this is what life is about, to have experiences of cosmic consciousness, of opening of vistas of unspeakable beauty and wonder and so on, then they are caught in that. And just as much caught as we are, as people are, in this material flat world. It needs something more. One has to discard, throw away something of oneself in order to be able really to enter into that world. Then one comes under a different power. Then an action begins. This called Geberut, the power of God begins to be felt. This is the time when the way is hard. If anyone enters into this, they experience the whole agony of separation. But only then, only when they have gone through this threshold, do they begin to see that they are deprived of everything that really matters while they're in this state of existence. Everything perishable, everything uncertain, conditioned and limited. And really made worse, made more unbearable when one understands that this vision has given one nothing. The first requirement for this is that one should be able to see that this vision, this cosmic consciousness, has done nothing for one. I remember when this happened to me nearly 40 years ago now. No, it is not so much. Not so much. But I remember, I thought everything had happened that could happen. For days I was in a state of bliss and ecstasy. Then it little by little dawned on me that I was just the same as I had been before. Only then did I really begin to suffer. This is very strange, this second world. A name that's also given to this is the Alemi Ervach, called the spiritual world, world of spirits, Ruch, the spirits. It is called purgatory, and also name for it. What does it mean? It means the state in which one is aware that one is not able to be what one needs to be. That one is not able to possess what one has seen. This state, unless you pass through this state, it is impossible. There is no way, I think. Everyone has always said this, and my whole of my experience confirms it, that there is no way through except through this door. But then cosmic consciousness becomes cheap. It is nothing. What is the worth of it if I am still not able to go the way I must go? I must return to my source, to my origin. Not so many people pass through this door. You must understand that. We talk about it. Everyone who studies Sufism knows all these things that I talk about. What is this? This spiritual world. To enter this, one must be detached. One has to be able to abandon one's attachment to one's body, to one's bodily experiences, to every kind of external support. One has to be as if one had died. Then one can come under that power. This is why it's called Geberut. to be under the power of God, to allow the action of the divine power to work on us. People think it's a lovely thing to be purified, to have one's egoism and one's defects cleared out of one. Maybe, but it's not a pleasant thing, not without much suffering. And there is no way out. We have to have great respect for those who plunge into this. Istigraq, the plunge, the going, letting oneself be taken by this power, and let it act upon one. Then come glimpses of something else. Until that time, the love is truly only a word. It is truly only a word given to something that you don't know, or that you quite wrongly apply to things that to which the word love is not a fit word to be given. Only then you see this compassion, this divine compassion, which has drawn you in to this. This is called the Melekut. This is a very high thing. When I first heard about these things and all these words, I can remember how I took them as if it was something that one could know about. But the year after years passed, the more the perspective grew deep and long for me, the more I saw the immensity of this step which enables one to enter into this forecourt of God's presence. Merely, we talk about these things, but if you could know how few people can come to it. Not that it's not the will of God that they should, but that we people have entered into such a state of existence, we've become so much the slaves to every kind of experience that beckons to us, that each time we get caught. You may think, but how can people want to be caught in this state of being under this power? Ah, yes, but time comes when things are very different. When there begins to be in this state of Jeberut quite a different kind of experiencing, a certain solidity, a certain assurance that is very, very alluring. One thinks, now I have acquired something, now I am beginning to be something. And we say this, as you know, we say, after Fana Baka, and we say, this is the experience of Fana. Now I know what Baka is, but believe me, there are so many deceptive Bakas, so many deceptive resurrections. How many times I've said to myself, this, I am being born again, now I am rising from the dead. Yeah. And what did I see? The same man rose again. Never really died. It is then when you see how many ways we can deceive ourselves. You know, the first deception, as I say, is this believing in visions and ecstatic experiences, the opening of cosmic consciousness, the complete transformation of everything. The second is one where one begins to feel that there has been death and resurrection in oneself, and that something has really happened. And one doesn't see that this is simply a deeper illusion now. If anyone is able to free themselves from the illusion that they have anything at all of their own, that is any reality other than that. I say, if you can free yourself from this, then for a moment the everything changes. And you have that experience that there is a quite different God from the one which you ever dreamt of. Quite different, who can't be spoken of anymore. You know that not only can't be spoken of, but there's no longer a sense of there being a power working or something like this. No longer can anything that you ever said be said anymore. That is the threshold, that is the beginning for those who come to it. In Sufism, we then say, this leads to the final annihilation, the fena'i zat. Everything disappears. Not only oneself, but the world and God all disappear. Then we say, this is who. We say, this is who viet. This is that state. Who viet is the word for a state. The state when that which came from the source has re-entered the source. Hu viet. That is how I pronounce it. If I were an Arab, I would pronounce it differently. That state is, for Sufis, the way of speaking of the end, the final liberation from everything that separates. Now, how are these things possible? We've got instruments, eyes and ears and the rest, to know about this external world. We've got minds to think about this world. We've got mind to think and make pictures and form concepts of other worlds. And we don't see that these minds have their source, not in anything above or higher. They have no future, no destiny. They are simply the instruments of this world. It is hard for us to accept the idea that the mind must be annihilated. That everything that we have that thinks, that feels, that knows, that sees and hears, all this is the instruments of imprisonment within this world. Well, it happens tomorrow morning early, I'm off to India to take part in the celebration of the 100th anniversary of Sri Aurobindo's birth. I mention Aurobindo because Aurobindo was a great prophet of this time, and his great message was the message of what he called the supramental, and he spoke of the descent of the supramental at this time. Clumsy kind of word, but it is an important thing, because he at least got over to a large number of people that our human mind is a totally inadequate instrument for arriving at any real understanding. That it is only when it is possible to plunge beyond the mind that anything happens. And it is this moment of plunging beyond the mind that reveals to us this, what we call cosmic consciousness. But how do we have this cosmic consciousness if it is not possible for our minds to have it? Because we have other instruments. Because we are not people, we are not created just with a mind. This is a cheap instrument, this human mind. Cheap in terms of the path to reality. It is not cheap for this world. It gives us immense power in this world. It enables us to dominate in this world. But it is cheap when you look at the other world. But we people were not intended for just for this. So we've been given instruments. We've given an instrument, a spiritual instrument, which is able to live and enter into this second world, this what we call, what I said, Jeberut, the Alemi Ervach, the world of spirits. We have a spiritual perceptions. We have to awaken these spiritual perceptions. They will awaken to in us partly through the intense need that one begins to feel when this first shows itself to us, the intense need to be able to experience this other reality, and not only to experience it, this is in the long run, or not very long run either, utterly dissatisfying. One cannot accept merely to see and not to possess what one loves. Though that is the first thing, this is where your patron, Ibn Arabi, was a great teacher. He taught the necessity for man to awaken and strengthen and learn to use and live with these finer instruments. He achieved it himself, and he brought many, many people to the conviction that this is indeed possible for us. You mustn't think that you can enter purgatory with this body and mind. If you want to enter that world, this Jeberut, this world, you have to enter it with your spiritual nature, not with your natural self. But this spiritual nature of ours is in dire trouble. Don't think that just because we have a spiritual nature, that this spiritual nature has only to be awakened and released, and it is already able to find its goal. No, our spiritual nature is tainted with our own egoism, tainted with our own illusions, tainted with our own craving for existence, our holding on to externals. All this is in the spiritual nature, not only in our physical nature. We have to be awakened in us, the instrument, the spiritual instrument that can see how it is with us. And that is a very, very, very great suffering, but it is also, as this spiritual instrument of ours begins to awaken, and we begin to see that the realities are so extraordinary that everything else ceases to matter. Only one thing, to possess that. Then comes the time when yet another instrument, a higher instrument still, an instrument that is not spiritual but divine, an instrument that is lent to us, or given to us, or somehow we're drawn to it. I don't know how to speak of that. But this divine instrument then allows us to go beyond all this and to see that the whole of this existence is nothing. This is nothing but a shadow, a play. Then comes quite a different kind of thing, quite a different kind of opening. And these, I've simplified the talk, I've simplified, because many people, as you know, speak of it in the different stages and so on. There are many ways. And what I say is just one way of speaking about it. If I spoke about it tomorrow, I would speak about it differently, because this can never be said the same way twice. Why do I say all this to you? Because I wanted, when I asked if I could come and speak to you, I wanted to say one thing only to you, but I had to prepare all this, and that is that I want to ask you to have an unlimited respect always present in you for the word who. Sometimes I suffer when I hear the word who, the syllable who, used lightly. I must tell you, because I'm no friend of yours if I don't speak to you truly, I came with many of you who are here, I think, to that festival that was at near Glastonbury, at Pilton. And I saw people, some of you I think were even there, dancing round and joining hands with people as if it was a sort of country dance, and chanting Yahoo or Hu Yah, Hu, or Allahu, Allahu. You know the words Allahu cannot be spoken like that. It is not right. The words, if the word Allahu is pronounced, the whole depth of one's being must be stirred by it. You all of you wear symbols symbolizing this breath of life, this breath which is far more than that, the word Hu. But you've chosen and you've taken this supreme symbol of the source of everything, the ultimate that is beyond everything, and you are not respecting it as you should. You think you are. You know that for many, many years I didn't dare to pronounce the word God. And I did. There were some words I couldn't bring myself to pronounce. The word God, the word love, I just couldn't bring to my lips because I felt so far away from them. Then little by little, I don't know whether because I had grown hard and callous or something, or whether I perhaps penetrated more deeply, God knows, but I began to use these words. I tried to use them with deep respect. But of all words, the one, perhaps of all sounds, the one to be most respected is the word Hu. And because it stands for everything. It stands for that which is in every breath we breathe. And it stands for the source which can only be reached by complete annihilation of everything. Because it is beyond all existence, beyond all being. You will have to use the word, but I came here to beg you to remember that you've chosen the holiest syllable that there is, and if you've done that, you've taken on yourself a great responsibility. If you are treat it without this respect, it is sacrilege. It is only the fewest of the few, the rarest of the rare, actually come to the reality of Hu. The very great chosen ones, chosen and sent messengers, only they can really, really say the word Hu. Those who come directly from the source and will return to the source, they know what Hu is. So you must forgive me if I speak like that way. And I did ask permission to do this. I was not invited. I thrust myself on you in that way. And I didn't come. I came because this power which must be obeyed, Al-Muti, who must be obeyed, made me come. There is within us all this power. But for that we must be, to be able to listen to and be obedient to that power, we must put aside all visible and thinkable things. Well, now, having done my duty, now I can scratch my ear.